You're listening to Drop of Inspiration, a Young Living podcast. Join me for leadership lessons, conversations with Young Living influencers, and an inside perspective on our company. I'm your host, Celeste Rosenloff. Hi, Drop of Inspiration listeners. It's good to be back with you, especially to talk about one of my favorite topics, the DGear Young Living Foundation. So, to share their experiences, we met up with Lauren Walker, Chief Supply Chain Officer at Young Living, and Todd Walker, Vice President of Global Sales and Business Innovation. So in July, they accompanied the DGear Young Living Foundation to Uganda, where they worked with the partners there. So real quick, a little bit about Uganda. So the country sits just south of South Sudan between the Democratic Republic of the Congo and Kenya, and it shares the shores of Lake Victoria with Rwanda and Tanzania to the south. According to the 2014 Ugandan census, the country's population sits at nearly 35 million people, and their cultures are as diverse as the country's varying landscapes of tropical rainforests and savanna woodlands. So our guests visited Uganda's capital city, Kampala, as well as Jinja, which lays on the banks of Lake Victoria, to work with the Young Living Foundation's partners. So today we're speaking with Lauren and Todd about their experiences, and I can't wait for you to hear all about it. So let's jump right in. Hi, Lauren. Hi, Todd.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, thank you. Thanks for joining us today. Before we talk about the specific partnerships, I'd like to just get some high-level comments from both of you about the service trip and what it meant for you to be involved. So Lauren, would you go first?
Sure. First of all, I have been telling a lot of people this feeling and emotion, but it was transformational for me. Seeing how some people live and some of the challenges that they experience in their life that you would just never imagine living in a more developed country was just really eye-opening to me. And it just really made me come back and think differently about the appreciation level I have for some of the things that we have access to here in the U.S. But overall for me, that was a big takeaway for me.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts, Todd?
You know, for me, I would say it's a personal goal, and I would say a family goal, to be able to help out, you know, broader than our circle, and to really be able to give back, if you will. And I think it was just a very amazing opportunity to do that with Young Living. And we both are very grateful of what the foundation provided in terms of an opportunity to really get firsthand experience at really enhancing lives and impacting humanity. It was just an overall rewarding experience for me. It was an impactful experience, and one that I want to do again, probably with my family, with our kids.
Right. And being able to do that through Young Living and with members was just over the top.
So I want to talk about your experiences with Healing Faith in just a moment, but first I want to play a clip of audio introducing the charity to our listeners.
Healing Faith is a ministry that seeks to educate, equip, and empower the people of Uganda to help battle malaria. The impact of partnering with the Young Living Foundation has been the consistency of the help that we're able to provide. And so now we can go in with the assurance that we can help 100% of that area. Everyone can be covered at night. Everyone can be helped in an area.
Okay, so you spent your first couple of days in Uganda with Healing Faith. Can you tell me about that, Todd?
Sure. I would say that was our first experience and didn't know what to expect at all. It was an experience that the first part of it, the first day, was really more around visiting the clinic and connecting with the kids and an environment where we were helping to paint the playground. And that experience alone was really rewarding for us both. Observation was we were doing the work as a team, members and Lauren and I, and the kids were watching. And so Lauren, of course, didn't follow the protocol. And so she went and grabbed the kid, took him on the playground.
Gave him paintbrushes.
Right.
Gave him paint. And then all the kids started painting. They were so excited. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, because, you know, we're sitting here painting. This is for them. This is right. something they're going to come back and see and love and enjoy and play on. And so you let them paint. And now they got to... this is something that they'll be enjoying for hopefully hopefully they don't have to go there and experience because it's about malaria, but it's nice that they were able to engage.
That's right. And it's a part of, it's their community, right?
Right.
And they were making an impact there. But it was just precious to see because it was just one person doing it and the kids were all watching. And actually the teachers or the guy, the counselors there, they were kind of holding the kids off. And we said, no, have them come join. And all of a sudden, they were into it. I mean, they were painting with detail, getting excited about it. It was
they were
a
painting their skins and faces, everything we didn't want them to paint, but they had a blast.
It was good. It was very good.
Sounds like an experience with children.
Totally.
But that's so great.
So that was the first. The first day was really more around understanding the clinic and understanding what's there, and also seeing what happens as a kid actually has malaria, or is concerned about malaria. How they go to the clinic, they're tested to see if in fact they do, and how they treat it. And it blew our mind to see the packet that they put together for both detection and prevention and treatment. And it's a $2 packet, very
even
simple.
Even less than that, it was $1.79, I think it was, total.
Yeah. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
If you can imagine. So
to identify and save a life
of
a human being.
And what we found out there was that, in fact, every case of malaria is treatable. Right? So that was just, first of all, an amazing observation and understanding.
Right,
the
so that
next day.
Dying over malaria is just.
It's unfortunate. So the next day, right? So it's all about prevention and it's about using the mosquito nets, right? And so we actually had a chance to go out in the village and go into some of the homes there. And the homes were obviously very minimal. Grass huts. And But meet the families and hang up the nets, right? That was the objective. The first home we go to, we're walking towards the hut and walking toward the lady, the mom, and we see two freshly dug graves. And so we talked to her and we found out that in fact the week before, she actually buried two of her children that died from malaria.
$1.79
That could have saved
two people.
Yeah,
and just a week earlier.
Yeah,
it hit us. I think smack between our eyes, the impact that we could make. I mean, when we talked to a couple of the moms, they were just in tears, understanding more about what this clinic does and what we were doing because they weren't aware of it, and they were thinking, of course, in their minds, if we would have known this, a month ago, 2 weeks ago, we would have our children. Which was just absolutely very, very impactful moment for us all.
Yeah. But the positive about that visit to the village is now we're on a proactive side. So installing nets, giving education, talking about this center, it could be a game changer and a life changer for people in this village.
Absolutely.
Right?
It's just
going from the tragedy that is or was to the hope and future expectations of what could be a more positive experience. You know, if they prevent it from happening in the first place, and having minimized the impact on so many children in that village. So I'll just say about the happy side of me going to this village and Ty going to this village and the members is seeing these beautiful little children and how happy they are and the love that they have for their siblings and family members and. You know, the older ones taking care of the young ones with pride, not because they have to, but because they love and adore their siblings. It was just so, and so to see that joy and to also understand the experiences that they have when they lose a sibling, it is transformational for them because they are so close to their family. Their family means everything to them. And although these kids were living in poverty, they didn't know that they're living in poverty. That's what they have food, they have access to food.
They have all the bare
needs taken care of, but they don't have some of the basic health care access, like malaria treatment.
Right.
So to go there to see what can be is just really exciting.
So you two also spent time with Soul Hope, which offers treatment to people who have been infected by jiggers.
Yeah.
And so here's a quick introduction.
My name is Drew Colley. I'm the executive director of Soul Hope. Once we realized nobody was doing anything about the problem of jiggers, we took a couple exploratory trips and talked to locals and really got involved in the community and seeing how bad this problem was. We found out that there's a lot of stigmas around jiggers. A lot of people think it's witchcraft or a curse. Every week we're doing medical clinics. We're going to schools and villages. We're seeing 150 to 200 kids. We're washing their feet by hand. We're inspecting their feet and removing their jiggers and then giving them a pair of shoes. And the really important part is the education. The education's gonna be what changes this problem for the future.
Lauren, what did the days at Soul Hope look like and what impressed you?
Yes, well, I have this, before I could go to what impressed me, I have to talk about what we saw. To see families that come in that are infected with these parasites, and mostly on their hands and feet, but also in various parts of their body, not just the adults, not just the older children, but the babies, the 5, 6, 7 month old babies with tens, sometimes even hundreds of jiggers. And to remove these jiggers means that they are stuck basically with a needle that I guess they put in a little bit of alcohol to make sure that they're not getting contaminated. But there's no pain relief. There's nothing. They just go there and get stuck with these pins to remove these parasites, and the babies are screaming. The thought and vision of that is really overwhelming, and many of us cried as we're holding the babies down to make sure that this treatment can be done adequately, because they all have to be removed. Otherwise, these jiggers lay between 200 and 400 eggs. And so if they don't get them all out, they come back and reinfest the entire family, because they lay eggs around the house, and then bedding gets destroyed, and they crawl on mats and sofas, and the entire family gets impacted. So just that thought of having to have to deal with that. And then these families are put out by their community, because they are considered contaminating. They're contaminated, it's evil, maybe this a witchcraft that's on them. And so they're actually set aside by their community and sometimes not allowed to come back and integrate with the rest of the community. So removing of these jiggers is a life-saving, but also it gets them reintegrated within their community and gets their life back again and gets their sense of pride and community back where it needs to be. So the removal part is important, but it's just to see that and the pain that these little babies experience, the parents experience by getting these removed, was just unimaginable before this.
Yeah.
What's your thought?
Well, you know, it's interesting, as Lauren's talking about it, you know, part of the focus of, I think, all the partners that the foundation actually work with, it's about education as well, right? And so one of the unique things, just as it was with Healing Faith, you know, the education of what's, how to prevent, malaria. But also when you think about Soul Hope, a lot of it's about education. So this idea, the stigma that's around, you know, the witchcraft,
exactly,
or being, you know, possessed or whatever.
Yeah. You didn't get this because you're not a believer. You didn't get this because
right.
you're not, you know, faithful
right.
enough for it.
Right. So they provided the education, so hopefully they understand that that's impacting the community alone, right? Alone, because it takes away some of the stigma that's there. But I thought it was a phenomenal, total experience for us to first of all kind of lightly go into a school environment, which was really exciting and just rewarding. I mean, seeing these kids happy and jumping around, and we got in and we danced with them and played song, did little games with them, applied stickers and had a good time. But then we also set up the assembly line that was really around inspection for
yes.
jiggers, mm-hmm. right?
Kids that we suspected had jiggers.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And then also inspection, but then also collecting data, you know, social data
yes.
about them.
Right. What kind of house do they live in? What kind of floors do they have? Is it concrete? Is it dirt?
Right.
Do they have, how many siblings
Uniforms.
Do they have? Do they live with both parents? Are the parents alive? Do they live grandparents? Because all of this is data that's informing to the type of scenario that may exist that would allow jiggers to exist in this particular household.
We'll come back.
Right, and
we'll
with that back. Data, now the community service can go target people who fit these particular criteria as a likely candidate that to do prevention,
yeah.
treatment, education. you know, from ground zero, as mm-hmm. opposed to letting it get to where it spreads so much.
And we all got involved and washed. So a lot of folks were actually set up in stations to wash the feet, right? To record what's happening, to inspect. And I happened to get one of the worst cases. This is the easy one, right? So this was like the it shouldn't have any major cases.
This was like a school. So most of these kids were in school and weren't as infected. Like if we found some with jiggers, maybe they had 5 or 6 or 7.
Right, right. Okay. So of course, I was able to work with a young boy. I don't know, he's about maybe 7, 8 years old. And oh my gosh, he had 30 jiggers. On
was this one at the school?
At the school.
Oh.
This is the one where we were holding him and crying. And
oh, was that at the next day or was that at the school?
No, at the school, at the school. So it was interesting because actually one of the members, Heather, she just said the day before, she says, how do we deal with a situation when our emotions just take over us? And I can see that potentially happening, you know? Not saying that it will, but it may happen. And so she came over. And she's with me, and she's inspecting. And she goes, you know what, how about if I trade places with you? And I'll do the inspecting, and then you go over to wash the feet. And she said, well, let me watch you this one time. It ended up being an hour process. It was unbelievable. And we got to the point where I had to hold him because he was in such pain, and he was crying and shaking. And they couldn't, obviously, they were cutting the jiggers out, so they can't do that precisely if you're moving.
No painkillers.
Right, no painkillers. And so I'm holding him, and she's actually recording, and we're both bawling our eyes out with him in pain. What was rewarding afterwards, he didn't give us any smiles afterwards, but he was able to at least get up. I lifted him up and took him over to get fitted for his shoes. And he had his shoes on, and had his lollipop, and he was walking around with the rest of the kids later on that day, which was really wanting to see. This was the light case, and so I'll let you talk about the clinic.
The clinic was kind of where I started talking before. The clinic is where you have the entire families that come, and these are from the most affected or infected parts of town. And
some of them were actually recommended or identified at the school.
Yes,
and
right.
And they go there.
Right, exactly. And the great part about it is that the entire family is getting treated, and then they're given education about how to treat their home and things to do differently. One family, it was the family of 9 is what we call them, mother, father, and seven children. Again, the youngest being about 5 or 6 months, all had jiggers. The mother had 287.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
and 287.
And the father had just as many, and then the little baby had quite a few. The baby had a lot, probably because the baby is nursing with the mother, and so it's close proximity to the mother, and they're just leaping onto the baby. Oh, it was just so sad. But again, education. So the family was treating their, they didn't know what to do, so they had some kind of acid that they were using to pour on the jiggers to try to kill the jiggers. And it was literally destroying the nerve endings in their feet, and could potentially cause liver and kidney damage. And so they were causing even more problems. So the education that they learned at this facility was also just critical for future, because it will likely come back. But now they know how to treat it. They know what to do. They know what to look for. They know not to wait. Come immediately to get it resolved. So there's light at the end. And then giving them shoes. So how do you prevent this? Wear shoes. Okay, really? Shoes. Well, all of the things that we take for granted. I mean, how many people do you see walking down the street here in Utah without shoes? Everyone has shoes, right? Most people there don't walk around with shoes, at least in the village area. And shoes can be a protector.
Right.
And so it's Soul Hope providing these shoes to children that most of our members and people around the globe provide. They take old jeans and they send it, and then that's where they start producing these shoes mm-hmm. that these family members now walk home with, and a new start on life for them. Mm-hmm. And so what's great about Soul Hope is that the family can stay there to recover. Mm-hmm. So it's not treatment and then get out, go back home. They stay there until they are healed. And then they get visual inspections every day to make sure that everything was removed, that they're healing properly. And if there's other treatment that's needed, like say they started to get infection, they can then get transported to a clinic to get that treated. So they're watched, they're monitored to make sure that when that family leaves, they have a new hope on life.
Yeah.
So that name is so appropriate, Soul Hope. I mean, because it's about the jiggers that are often in the soul. Mm-hmm. But the soul, you know, who they are, this essence of who they are, they now have hope. That name means so much. It's so much more than removing the jiggers from the sole of their feet. It is, it's just, it's transformational for those folks.
Well, and it sounds like it also has social impact too.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
I mean, who has ever felt, you know, lonely or isolated, and that changes the course of your life.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. You know, I read, after that trip, I read, I was reading some blogs. It had nothing to do with Young Living, but it was some people who were very vocal in criticizing people
very
like us who go to those kind of communities and environments in maybe Africa or Asia to try to help out. And they say, oh, it's just, they're just doing it for publicity. There's no way that those people can go there and over the course of a week really change the lives of others. And you know what? We're not at all saying that us being there saved a life or we made the future of that environment significantly better. But however, what we learned, we're now able to bring back. So when I talk to people and they have questions about should they round up and the value of those few cents, the impact is gonna be, that's gonna be made on a whole community, maybe even a whole country. That story is what we take away, and that's what we share. We didn't go there saving lives. We went there to learn. We went there to understand the impact. And now through those stories and talking to others about what we experience and what's happening on the ground somewhere else, guess what? We are changing lives. We are changing lives, not physically, but what we did, but by our voice being heard and the energy that's now being created to make an impact by just a little bit of giving. Just a little, a few cents can make the difference in someone living or dying from malaria.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Impactful.
Yeah. Well, and a good reminder, you know, for people who are here in the U.S. who aren't impacted by some of these things regularly or at all, right?
Yeah.
That there is a need and that we can help fill it, especially with how carefully the foundation vets these organizations to make sure
That's
that they have
so
sustainable
correct.
Projects. On the ground in those locations and that they have, you know, local people involved and that kind of thing that really helps make a lasting difference in that area.
Mm-hmm. So true.
Yeah.
So.
And here's the reality also that the group of members that went with us, they are so active now. Their voice is so vocal. Mm-hmm. And we know that like Melissa and a couple others are going back. But they also are bringing this opportunity in their own communities to make a difference, but then also thinking very, very broad around how they can actually increase the amount of impact with their teams and with them, with these foundations, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's great. So shifting gears a little bit, I want to talk about African Hearts. So on the final days of your trip, you went into the slums of Kampala, where African Hearts operates. So African Hearts offers a safe place for kids in the slums, as well as food and an education. So I'm gonna play some audio real quick introducing this partnership.
My name is Lotaya Abdul, born again, and I live in Senge. I am the executive director of African Hearts Community Organization. African Hearts exists to transform the lives of vulnerable children to become fully developed individuals, honoring God and contributing positively to society. On the streets, it's a survival for the fittest. These days, street children live in the slums, where there is violence, the strong will take it all. It's kind of a very tough situation for the kids to live, and we cannot pretend we're not seeing it.
Todd, can you share some overall impressions about your experiences with African Hearts?
Believe it or not, this was the most impactful for me. And that's saying a lot because you got a feeling of what Soul Hope meant, what the experience of healing faith meant. This was the most impactful. It was, my overall impression was one of joy, sadness, just a mix of emotions, because what we were able to experience was, I mean, the worst of the worst. I mean, in an area of slum that really provided an environment that was one that was almost scary to be around, right? Where many kids, many of the boys had no hope. Mm-hmm. And their relief was sniffing glue. Mm-hmm. And when I asked, you know, George, what is the prevalence of that? He said 90% or more. And this is their coping mechanism. They can't sleep at night, really, because they're worried about
being attacked.
Mm-hmm. If they have some belongings, someone would be attacking them and taking their belongings away from them. And this is the
kind of sleep in piles. The boys all sleep in piles, with the most vulnerable at the very bottom to be protected by the older, maybe more mature, more physically strong boys. But all they own is maybe the T-shirt that's on their back, and maybe they have a little small towel or something that they use as a blanket. But they're filthy. They haven't brushed their teeth or bathed in I can't tell you how long. Again, there is no hope for them. Yeah. And so what was amazing about African Hearts was some of them do have hope, and they can see a future. And so they quickly first identify who these boys are, because maybe the sooner we get them off the streets and find a different environment for them, they're not lost yet, you know?
I want to set up. Can you come back to that in a second?
Yeah, I will.
But as we walked around, because I think that's the second part of it, right? I mean, the first part of it is going through this environment. And as you walk through the environment, you're walking past, right beside you, prostitution.
Yeah.
Right beside you. And some people aren't aware of this, but just living in an environment that we're kind of a little more sensitive to this, we're looking at drug deals happening right in front of us. People getting money taken.
Part of Kampala.
People getting money taken away from them, and you can see it happening. So, who's vulnerable? You can see, you know, that, you know, the strong survive kind of thing, and that's the environment you're walking through, right? And it's an environment where these kids, many of them, don't have hope, right? And so now, you know, that's the picture. So now Lauren's talking about fast forward, you know, identifying those who want hope, who want a way out. And those individuals then are the ones that come to the clinic. And that's not even a clinic. What is it called?
It's like a
center.
Yes, yeah, sir.
Which is basically, it's a building on a floor. Mm-hmm. And it's a small building on a floor. And the kids are laying in there.
No, that's just their community center.
Okay, so yeah. The community center, right? So, but the ones who are coming to the community center are the ones that are more likely to be interested in a way out.
Mm-hmm.
And George and with the uncles,
that's
begin to mm-hmm. yeah,
the father figures in the community.
I was going to say George is the man who runs African Hearts, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, while we're at this community center, we each member, and then Todd and I and Greg, we got up and introduced ourselves to the kids. But when Todd got up to speak, and they looked at Todd as a black male, and the fact that he's from the U.S., it didn't register for them. They thought
is it uncle or is
that everyone from the U.S. is white, and so they said, "You're from the U.S.? Why are you black?" It's quite funny.
It does not compute.
We learned a lot. It's quite funny.
Right. They couldn't believe that I was actually with the group versus being an uncle, which is very interesting.
Yeah, you're challenging some of their ideas, right?
And so we explained.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Lauren, real quick, kind of as a final question as we wrap this up, I wanted to ask you, so you had shared a pretty incredible story with me earlier about some of the girls there overcome and how you shared your own story of adversity to be where you are now. And though there are, you know, some really obvious differences in your story and that of the girls, would you mind talking about the experience of being able to use your story to encourage
Absolutely.
The girls?
Absolutely. So part of one of the stops that we made was, again, through African Hearts, they have a school. And what's so wonderful about this is that anyone can contribute towards a school and maybe even pay for a tuition or something like that for a child to sponsor them for a year so that they get their education. And it was amazing as we were walking through the school, what the penmanship of these kids, like,
oh my gosh,
their English is perfect. And so, you know, the transformation from where some of these kids came from to what now they're learning and they're being educated and there's hope and there's a future for them. They can learn a trade, they can go into college, which many of them had planned to do, and through this organization was just fantastic. But one of the stops within that school was a portion of the school that had younger girls who were a victim of the streets, and many of them got pregnant. And for them, they were probably, what I would say, had the most despair, because being a woman, now having a child that you have to raise, And the fact that women, the focus on education is not necessarily focused on women. It's just not, right?
Right.
Them being in this environment, they have to overcome certain mental hurdles to be able to integrate into society and make a difference. And so I just wanted to share with them, look at me, I'm black, I'm like you. I came from circumstances that were really rough. I lived in a very roughest part of Brooklyn, New York. Back then, today you can't afford to buy a house in Brooklyn because it's been exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
But back then, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, I'm dating myself, there was not always a lot of hope, or some of the areas that you lived in were really, really rough. But guess what? I believed in myself. I had people that supported me. Like, they have a community that's now surrounding them to give them hope that there is a better way of life. Like, same thing like me. And you can do it. You have to have hope. You have to have confidence and faith in yourself that you can overcome these circumstances. These circumstances are not who you are. It's just your current situation. And you can work yourself out of it. And it was just great being with them because they can do it. And there's hope for them. And hopefully that short, small story could inspire them.
Yeah.
That, you know, someone who comes from, you know, not quite the same circumstances or environment, but who had a very meager upbringing could make it in this world, and they could do the same.
It was very, very impactful seeing it happen, and they were translating back to the folks there, and it was, you can see the eyes, the engagement, and so it can very much impact a couple people, you know.
I'd wanted to end on that because I think that there is so much hope in that idea, and to relatability. Right. I think it's so easy to make these kids or, you know, people all the way across the world like the other, when really they're people like us.
Absolutely.
In circumstances that
they
don't have control over. But finding the hope in there is what I really wanted to share with people today, because I think that was something that throughout our conversation today, I've really felt the impact of is like, yes, things are painful and hard, but there is hope, and there's people doing good in the world.
And there is a path that gets people to a different place through our foundation. Yeah. It's just an amazing transformation that I could see happening. Well, thank you so much for allowing us to spend some time with you, because again, we learned so much and we did so much, and it's great to be able to share it with others.
Thank you so much. It was a great experience, and we also really enjoyed connecting with the members for a like cause.
They'll be lifetime friends.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you two so much. It was great to sit down and chat with you.
Thanks, Celeste.
Thank you, Celeste.
I just loved hearing about Lauren and Todd's experiences, and I hope you enjoyed it today as well. If you did and you are interested in learning more, we have some additional resources that I think you're really going to love. At youngliving.com/podcast, we have a video embedded on this episode's webpage under related content. So you can literally see some of the people who Lauren and Todd are talking about, who they serve and work with and learn from. You can also head over to the Young Living blog and check out the article, How You're Making the World a Better Place, to read how the foundation used your member donations during their service trip to Uganda. That's at youngliving.com/blog. As always, thank you so much for listening. If you're feeling inspired today, could I ask you to go over to iTunes and drop us a review? We'd love to hear what you think, and we'll even make sure to give you a shout out during an upcoming episode. In the meantime, feel free to subscribe on your favorite podcast app, and for more information about this episode, visit youngliving.com/podcast. I'm your host, Celeste Rosenloff. Stay inspired.